From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in Radio West, we're talking about the latest in our documentary series. It's the filmmaker Bing Liu's coming-of-age story of skateboarding buddies in a declining Rust Belt town. It's called Minding the Gap. The film was a hit at Sundance this year, won the Jury Award for Breakthrough Filmmaking. It's about young men struggling to deal with the realities of growing up and getting caught in a cycle of violence. Join us in just a moment.
We want to take a moment to shout out The Good Line for supporting this podcast. If you're building a brand, these guys can help you with websites, film, design. They're all about finding and telling stories that bring together a full brand experience. Check out the new Radio West Films website to find out what that means, or you can see what else they do at thegoodline.com.
As you'll hear in a moment, the journey of Bing Liu's documentary film, Minding the Gap, was a long one. At first, it was conversations with skateboarders, talking about their relationships with their families, how no one seemed to get it, their passion for hanging out and riding. But over time, the film became something else. Bing has said he had this vague idea about masculinity and violence and generational behavior, and these themes kept coming up. Bing himself fits into this group. Skateboarding for him was an escape when his stepdad got mean. So the film he came up with is really personal. And it's hard to pin down exactly what it is, but it's a profile of three young men in economically depressed Rockford, Illinois, trying to find some measure of control as they come to terms with growing up. This is the latest in our documentary series, our partnership with Utah Film Center. We're going to be screening Minding the Gap next Wednesday. We'll give you some details about that a little bit later on the program. Bing Liu directed and produced the film. He joined us from the studios of NPR member station WBEZ in Chicago. So Zach, your friend in the film, says right up front, really early on, that there are these times in your life, you know, before you start analyzing your future or your motivations, and you just do, is how he puts it. But then he says somewhere down the line, everyone kind of loses that, you know, that impulse to just do. And there are a couple of themes and threads in the film that we'll talk to, but I kind of wanted to start with that idea because that seems to be, in some ways, a really important part of what the film is about. Would you talk about that?
I mean, we sort of toyed around a lot with that opening soundbite. Like we were looking for a way to sort of really color, like in a general way, what the audience was going to think about throughout the course of the film.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, it's so experiential, and there's so many different issues and threads that ultimately come up, you know, as the film progresses. And we figured we wanted something that had to do with coming of age, but specifically coming of age for, you know, boys and for men,
yeah,
for young men.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it also speaks to, you know, obviously Zach's character arc within the film, that he's both going to change in a drastic way, but also he's very self-aware and he's very intelligent about it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's just the process that went behind choosing that as the opening bite.
The scope of the film is really long. I mean, we see you guys fairly young. I mean, when did you start filming first it was skating, I'm guessing. And when did you first start shooting each other?
Yeah, I mean, so in the film, it's like you see us when we're like 11, 14, 17 years old. And then, you know, by the end, it's like we're in our, you know, a couple of us are in our late 20s.
Yeah.
So the scope of time is pretty big. You know, people have called it like a boyhood sort of documentary.
Right.
But in reality, that was, you know, that was structured in the edit. I didn't really go, the archival footage that's in the film, I didn't really sort of go back and work that in until the final months of editing.
Huh.
I mean, the seed of the film itself started about 6 years ago when I drove around the country and interviewed skateboarders about their families, about, you know, their upbringings and childhood development. And After a couple of years, I had this sort of survey film that was pretty, you know, on the nose about the issues that ultimately are a lot more implied in the final version of the film.
And so
I brought that survey film to Kartemquin Films in Chicago, and they're best known for films like Hoop Dreams. And so they introduced me to a different style of documentary storytelling, and I didn't realize that, you know, you could do documentaries like this. So that's when I started following a couple boys from Rockford who I had sort of known growing up, and, you know, just followed their lives. And, you know, over the course of time, I couldn't have asked for a more compelling story, just sort of being there and having the access to what happened over the next few years. And then eventually I found a way to work myself in the film in a non-traditional way as well.
That's the
larger process of how this came to be.
Yeah. We'll get to your part in the film here in a moment. It's interesting, I've heard you talk a little bit about how there were various threads at first and how there were various versions of the film. One was about Kiri, one was about Zach, then you tried one with just you. And at what point did it start to come together, the idea of a film that would have these characters that we see now in the movie?
I mean, it was hard for me to sort of get to nix some of the storylines I'd been following when I was, you know, following people from around the country. And Kier sort of entered into that chorus of voices, I think, first, because there's a scene in the film where we commiserate about what happened when we were growing up. And that's the moment I realized, like, oh, this guy needs to be in the film. And then, a little while, and I must have made hundreds of versions of the film over the course of the few years. And when I knew that Zach, you know, the other main character who's in the final version of the film, when I knew that he was going to become a young father, that, you know, that his girlfriend was pregnant, that's when I was like, oh, here's a trackable story that I can follow, and it'll be, you know, a verite film. And then over the course of the years, I just slowly, like, you know, I killed my babies, so to speak. But by then, they were maybe toddlers. I was killing my toddlers. and so eventually I was just left with Zach, Kier, and this father-son couple who also lived in Rockford, or just outside of Rockford. And they were the last ones that I finally, you know, sort of let go in the final year of editing.
Well, before we talk more about the themes in the film, I wanted people to get to know the characters that we did end up with in the film. And Kier Johnson is one you mentioned. And as we see it at sort of near the beginning of the film, Kier lives at home, but as he says, he spends most of his time really kind of on his own. I mean, he loves his family, that's clear. But also there's that thing, and this seems like a common element, they don't really get him. Let me play a moment, because this is a moment when he's showing us in the film his room at home.
If I really wanted to clean up before you came over.
I actually spend like the majority of my time here alone.
Why do you think that is?
It's mainly just because I always felt like I didn't fit in with my family.
It seems like they don't understand why I skateboarded in the first place.
Do you think that's the thing that kind of ties all the characters together in some way, and probably skateboarders in general, and the conversations you had going around the country, that people don't really get? I mean, it seems like to those on the outside, oh, it's fun, it's a diversion, but it seems like so much more for people like Kier.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, the main outsider thought about skateboarding is either fun or diversion, you know, or almost like a delinquent sort of thing to do for young people. And it's, you know, I mean, that's certainly the idea that I even had as I started doing the project. I knew we all sort of came from rough backgrounds with families that we didn't necessarily get along with. But it was just really interesting to actually put that thought into an experiment, actually, and with doing these interviews. And, you know, it turned out that the pattern was pretty prevalent. I think it really cemented during this one time when I was in St. Louis and I was interviewing this person who he told me a story about how one day he was skateboarding underneath this bridge at this DIY skate park called Side, which is a playoff the first DIY skate park in the country, Burnside in Portland, right, underneath the bridge. So he said, you know, they were all skating and then they were done with the session and they were sitting around just like, you know, hanging out and talking. And somebody brought up the fact that it was Father's Day. And he was like, well, why were you all here on Father's Day? And everyone, you know, someone was just like, well, my father is not around. Or somebody else said, you know, well, my father, I hate my father. Yeah. And so everyone just sort of took turns talking about like why, you know, like why they were at the skate park instead of at home. And so that was really telling for me. And, you know, I continued to sort of try to dig at father-son relations throughout the film, even as I started following Zach and Keir.
There's this scene I want to play. It's kind of an exchange between you and a guy named Eric, who owns a local skateboard shop. And I think the exchange is really interesting because he talks about just how serious this stuff is in terms of how skateboarding is more than just a diversion, as we were saying. Let me play this moment and we can talk about it.
I don't really remember when I first met you. You were just like kid that was always there, you know? Like, you'd come into the skate shop. I don't know, we'd talk about random stuff. And then that happened with a lot of kids. And they could come in and be like, yeah, dude, my parents suck, or this is going on. And they'd come in and unload, you know? But, like, you were introverted. And I didn't know, and I remember distinctly asking you if you were gay. Do you remember that at all?
No.
Like, I asked you, like, dude, are you gay? Like, what do you, like, I knew you had some huge weight on you. And you were like, nah, dude, you know? But I can't remember when you opened up to me about your mom and stuff, but you never really told me about anything about what was going on with you. And I guess in retrospect now, when I look at it, I'm like, I should have totally figured that out. Like, I could tell with you from the very beginning, like, skateboarding meant more to you than just being cool and having friends. Like, it was your thing to, like, get away. It was kind of a life or death thing.
Did you feel like being that, because of that sentiment, you know, that idea of it being important and hard really to talk about, it's that you had to get the skateboarding shots right to convey that? Do you know what I mean?
When you hear a skateboarding documentary, it has such a baggage to it.
Yeah.
I think people really write it off. I've been actually trying to actively fight against press and marketing to exclude the word skateboarding at all from, and to varying success, because, you know, people write about what they want to write about.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's got heavy baggage, and so, you know, I felt like we had to do everything we could to sort of convey it and express it and allow people to enter the headspace of skateboarders in a new way. And so I trained myself to film skateboarding in a very different way that I hadn't seen before. And it took me about a year to learn, you know, this technique where I was running with a glide cam and a DSLR mostly. There's two aspects of that, you know, really works in a way that's more accessible to non-skateboarders. I mean, first of all, it's at eye level. So, you know, usually skateboarding is filmed with low angles and it's, you know, glorifying the footwork. Mm. But this is more about, you know, like what it's like to, you know, at eye level to float around and be almost like a fluid, watery, you know, being,
yeah,
going around sort of a concrete jungle. I know that sounds really lofty and, you know, poetic, but it's, you know, I think that's when people see the footage that they know what I mean.
Can I just say, the thing that I got from the scenes was less about kind of craft and footwork, but just joy. Like, they just seemed like this joyous moment where you would, you know, could just check out of reality for a bit and just do this thing that you, that brought you such pleasure.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, that's, we're just, yeah, we want to try to convey what it feels like on a very emotional level, you know, to be on a skateboard. But what's important is the emotion, you know.
Yeah.
And I think there's an aesthetic to the skateboarding that makes it feel more like dancing or meditation almost, rather than how I feel like a lot of skateboarding is often portrayed often by non-skateboarders, which is this sort of macho punk thing. So everything down even to the music that we chose was really reflective of how I feel like skateboarding feels like to me and many other skateboarders.
Keir says that when you're skateboarding, you're on this kind of high, and then the drug wears off, and then you're back at reality.
Yeah, there's certainly you know, diminishing returns as you grow up and have to deal with new responsibilities, and not just responsibilities, but childhood experiences and, you know, memories that are traumatic. I mean, as the film moves along, I think skateboarding sort of, you know, becomes more complex, and the characters have a more complex relationship with skateboarding.
Yeah. Let's talk about Zach Mulligan. How do you describe him? I mean, I have to say he is... my relationship with him throughout the film is really interesting, because there were times when I'm like, dude, don't do that. That is such a stupid thing to do. But yet you love him, you know, because he's so charismatic and he's really funny. And he's also, as you said earlier, he's really self-aware. I mean, he's a kind of a uniquely charismatic guy. Talk a little bit about Zach.
Yeah, I mean, Zach is he is really complex. And I don't think people know how complex he is. And I certainly wouldn't have known how complex he was if I didn't, you know, really try to get at his inner feelings. I mean, Keir is one of the most emotionally, you know, transparent, wears his heart on his sleeve people I've ever met. And he, you know, like having it with the camera around, that doesn't change. But Zach really hides behind a mask of... something like that has to do with masculinity, that has to do with what he experiences as a child, that has to do with, you know, how he feels about himself. And you know, it took forever to really get him to show me his true vulnerability.
Let me play a moment. This is Zach from the film, and he really gets to something that I want to talked to you about, this idea of trying to sort of stay away from a mold that he felt like his father was trying to get him into. Here's another moment from the film.
My father was a carpenter. I learned a lot from him and a lot from my family. In the 80s, my father started a skate park in my grandmother's roller rink. And they managed the only indoor skate park in the area for 8 years or something like that. I was kind of raised to, you know, like, do what you want to do. And then somewhere along the line, he just, like, flipped the switch, like, wanted to become, like, conservative American. All of a sudden, there was all these rules and expectations. They were, like, pushing me into this mold of someone they thought was a good person. And I'm like, that. Like, I remember when, you know, like, I was a kid, like, we sang punk music and smoked joints and, like, you know, like, that.
It seems like the film is a lot about these relationships between young men and their fathers, certainly in the case of Keir and Zach. Also about your relationship with your mother too, and we'll come back to that. But these relationships between men and their fathers, that when did that start to become a, you know, sort of clear to you that this was kind of a thread?
I mean, it's certainly, again, it was sort of a thread since the beginning, even before Keir and Zach entered the picture. You know, it was this idea that was confirmed through interviewing multiple skateboarders of all ages, races, and genders around the country. And, you know, Zach and Keir very much fell into that experiment at first, and then, you know, eventually I started following all the other aspects of their lives. With Kier, I mean, that's very much more central to his storyline.
Yeah.
With Zach, it's less so because, you know, he has this very present day story of becoming his own father and struggling with that and struggling with the mother of his child. But yeah, I mean, it's certainly important. I think eventually it shifts towards, you know, what mothers sort of, what role mothers play in all the characters' lives.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You've talked about how this is, there's something in the film, some theme that's kind of hard to articulate. And you've described it as kind of this perception of what it means to be a man and how then this cycle of violence sometimes is part of it. Did you identify that early on in your conversations? Did this threat of violence seem to keep creeping in?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly did. It was just sort of one of the many themes of, you know, one of the many sub-themes of exploring father-son relationships. But I felt like I was using not just Zach and Kier, but many of the people I interviewed around the country as proxies to sort of figure out, you know, and make sense of what happened in my own childhood. And I mean, eventually I realized that wasn't really fair to them. And so, you know, after I sort of became a character in a way, I think Zach and Kier's stories became more their own again.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, certainly there's, you know, there's an event in the film that's very, very much changes the course of the film in many ways. And that sort of cemented in the cycle of violence as a very real issue that just, you know, holds true all the way to the end.
Yeah. Bing, I don't want to give too much away. What do you want to say about that particular moment?
I mean, so part of Zach's storyline is that he becomes this young father and he begins to have, you know, issues with the mother of his child.
Yeah.
And so he really struggles with that. And you know, it gets really heated.
Yeah.
It gets really volatile. And, you know, so you start to think like, how is he going to handle, these really volatile family situations, and how did he see his father handle it? And, you know, is he going to transmit that as well?
Yeah.
And of course the film answers that question.
That's Bing Liu. He directed and produced the documentary film Minding the Gap. Next Wednesday night, that's May 9th, we're going to be screening it for free at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center. It's part of our Through the Lens series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. Bing is going to join us for a Q&A after the film. We have details about all of that on our website, radiowest.org. We'll take a break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER.
Do you have an old station wagon full of memories and a busted transmission? Yeah, join the club. Give that car, or any car, a new lease on life by donating it to KUER. We'll have it picked up for you, so really it couldn't be easier. Then we split the proceeds with our car donation partner, and the money goes straight into the programming you love to listen to in the car. It's a regular public radio circle of life. Look under the support tab at KUER.org to learn more about car donation.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about the latest in our documentary series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. It's the filmmaker Bing Liu's coming-of-age story called Minding the Gap. The film was a hit at Sundance this year. We're going to be screening it next Wednesday night. We'll give you details about that a little bit later on the program. Let's talk to about your own relationship related to violence. You moved to Rockford, Illinois when you were pretty young, I think 8 or 9, you say in the film, and it wasn't long after that that your mother met your stepfather. And the way you convey the violence in your own situation, in part, is a conversation that you have or an interview that you do with your half-brother, Kent. Talk a little bit about your own relationship with this and because Kent reveals something in this moment, if it's okay we play, where he talks about your own experience with violence.
Yeah, you can certainly play it. I mean, I'll talk about sort of how I... So a couple years ago, you know, we must have had 20 or 25 rough cut feedback screenings over the life of the film. But a couple years ago, we did one in New York, and there, you know, I left in moments where I interacted with the characters, which is sort of how my character, where my character exists, actually, sort of, you know, as a voice behind the camera or as someone that, you know, you get a sense of from behind the camera.
Yeah.
And so I left in a lot of those moments before I was ever in the film as a character. And, you know, afterwards, after we screened the film a couple years ago, people asked me how I found the story. And I told them, well, I grew up knowing these guys. I grew up in Rockford as well. I also skateboard. I also, you know, dealt with similar issues at home. And they were like, well, have you... what?
Yeah, why aren't you in there?
Yeah, and yeah. So I asked everybody else, you know, how many people agree with that sentiment, and so everyone raised their hands, and I was like, okay, I'll try it. So it took a while to sort of figure it out, and it was more, I felt like it was less, you know, it was less about, like, me being afraid of being vulnerable, but more a storytelling problem of, you know, not trying to make a film that's too navel-gazing and too self-absorbed. And so, you know, the way I eventually landed on doing that was interviewing other people who could speak on my behalf.
But then at some point you figured you did need to, it was okay to include yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it was okay to include myself in front of the camera. I mean, certain sense.
Yeah. But I have to say what's interesting about that is that it seemed to me, as the story develops, I got a sense that in some way maybe you needed this film as a form of, and it comes up later, free therapy. Like making that film was helping you come to terms with the experiences of violence that you had experienced.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I feel like I've been trying to find free therapy my whole life.
Right.
In high school, I'd be the guy at the party who would, like, sidle up to people and, like, you know, as they're drinking, slowly get them to talk about their relationship with their parents. And so, yeah, I'd been doing that for years, just, you know, on the sly. And I continue to do that with this project, certainly. But it wasn't enough, you know. I mean, I really wanted to – I basically wanted myself to do that to myself. And so I did that through making this film, yeah.
Let's go back to this moment in a conversation you have with Kent, your half-brother. He's showing us around the house. You know the house. And then the idea of your stepfather and his violent temper comes up. And this is a really difficult, I have to say, moment. Let me play this and we can talk about it.
I remember hearing beating and, like, screaming coming from your room, and it was, like, unnerving screams of, like, anguish, almost, and it was, like, really, really unnerving. It was almost scarring.
Why do you figure that seemed to be something that kept coming up, that violence was always somewhere there in these stories? Have you been able to figure that out?
Well, I mean, domestic violence is pretty prevalent. I think because it's so not talked about, because, you know, people don't know how to talk about it, we tend to forget how prevalent it is. I mean, for one thing, it's certainly, and this has come up in Q&As at screenings, you know, people ask, you know, like, do you think Rockford or skateboarders, you know, in particular, are susceptible to seeing violence in the home? And the answer is no.
Yeah.
It's you know, it's a myth that domestic violence only happens in working class households or in minority households. I mean, it sort of affects, you know, all levels of society. It's very telling that all three boys, including myself in the film, I've experienced it at home growing up. But yeah, I mean, That's why the film works so well in sort of grappling with domestic violence, because it's, you know, told through character, and it's told through, you know, everything that that domestic violence does to these boys as they're all trying to grow up.
The film is also kind of about Rockford as well. It seems like Rockford's almost one of the characters in some ways. I mean, people are moving away from the town. The economy is struggling. They have, you know, this crime problem. And again, it's not just working class people who have this problem, but it seemed Rockford, I don't know, I wanted to get your sense of the place, because Rockford is a really important part. Even though you've talked to people from all over the place, Rockford really becomes kind of a setting, an important one.
I think there's a sense of being misunderstood that really drove me. I think that goes for being misunderstood as someone who has survived domestic violence and has seen it growing up. You know, I think to show domestic violence and what it means to have experienced it, and to show the effects that it has on you, was important, because I felt like often it took this, you know, I mean, you see like domestic violence films and oftentimes like it's like the emotional tone is so dark and somber. But in reality, if you live through it, and you live through it on an everyday basis growing up, I mean, it's, you know, it doesn't take away the other aspects of life, you know, the joy, the humor, the freedom, the escape. And that's just as much part of your experience growing up through it as the dark times and the pain and the suffering. So that's, you know, and I felt like the same thing held for growing up in Rockford and what Rockford is as a city. I mean, after I moved to Chicago 10 years ago, but even after moving to Chicago, I felt like even though Rockford is like 80 or 90 miles away, people don't understand. People don't really, you know, they drive past the Rockford sign. But it's, you know, people don't understand that it's sort of like a Flint, Michigan, you know, it's like really, it was a manufacturing hub that sort of fell apart in the 70s and 80s and 90s. And it's, you know, one of the highest crime rates per capita in the country. So there's a lot of issues there, but at the same time, I could imagine people not having grown up there going in and sort of doing a story that feels like poverty porn. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I see a lot of depictions of cities from people that didn't really grow up there, you know, only showing the boarded up houses, only, you know, playing like the horrendous statistics. And so I wanted to sort of reimagine a different way to characterize a city. And so one of the ways I did that was, you know, how do skateboarders see it? Yeah. And so throughout the film, you see these little nooks and crannies of the city that, you know, only skateboarders would really notice and highlight in their minds, because it's a skate spot that you know if you didn't skate, you wouldn't see it as this repurposable public space.
Yeah.
And also there's these billboards that provide PSAs for certain social issues. And I felt like that was really telling of, you know, what sort of money is getting thrown behind certain social issues in the city.
Yeah, I was struck by the billboards. We see them a couple of times during the film. These, you know, announcements about being a responsible adult or a responsible parent, and I have to say, it made me wonder for someone as young as you, like how you came to these really mature insights in the film. You know, being so young yourself in some ways. I mean, seeing young people come to terms with the reality of the future, like Zach, you know, confronting fatherhood. I wonder, were you thinking about it at the time when you were younger, or is this stuff that just came later as you were starting to edit and think about what the meaning of all this footage was?
I mean, like I said, I've been sort of seeking free therapy for you know, most of my life. And so, you know, I think the books I was reading really, you know, I really latched on to coming of age books that delved into, you know, what it meant to grow up as a kid who in dire circumstances. My first couple of years of college, I must have taken like four or five sociology classes, you know, sociology of family, sociology of race, sociology of gender. And I was looking for a way to make sense of what happened to me when I was growing up, you know, because it just totally didn't make sense. You know, it still sort of doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So I was looking for answers for a long time, and I was looking for patterns and, you know, anything to sort of help me emotionally and spiritually survive. But I mean, when I first saw the billboards, you know, when I first saw this like fatherhood billboard or whatever, I was like, oh, I'll film it, you know, but at the time I was like, this is so cheesy. This is never going to like make it in. But then, you know, we had it in a rough cut and someone like really, really liked it. There's always a minority of people who do think it is like a little too on the nose. But I think it was more about sort of the balance of how much we put in. I mean, there's plenty of other billboards that didn't make the film, but ultimately I think it's the right balance.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about Kier's childhood, which you explore in the film. And there's this scene when he's really young, fairly young anyway, and he's getting picked on and he gets in this fight and then he expresses this kind of rage after it. And then we see that come out, these kind of bursts of rage from time to time. And I wanted to just ask you a little about these sequences where you really see that come out. Did you notice that kind of theme, that recurring thing?
I think I was searching. I really saw, you know, later in the film I sort of reveal this to him, but I really saw myself in his story. Yeah. And I just like, you know, one of the first times violence in the home is introduced, it's a scene where me and him are sort of having a conversation, and I get him to sort of admit that he was abused. Mm-hmm. And then we commiserate about it, you know, by talking about how, yeah, you know, you cry afterwards. But I saw in him this like emotional wrestling within him. About, you know, he doesn't see it as purely, you know, bad. There's some aspect that he can't quite call completely bad about his father and what he did to him. And so I found that really interesting. To answer your question, you know, I think I was looking for a sort of anger within him to sort of validate or make sense of whether or not I felt angry as well. But he never really showed it.
Yeah, yeah.
So we had to sort of, and so I, you know, like I said, the last few months of editing is when I really dug through all the archival tapes. I didn't really know Kier growing up. I'm 29 now, and Zach is 27, and Kier's 22. So he's much younger than us. And so, you know, I caught him on tape once, just getting into a fight at the skate park.
Yep.
When I was a teenager. But I didn't know who, you know, oh, this is Kier. Mm. You know, I didn't really know of Kier until, you know, 4 or 5 years ago when I started following him. But I was digging through all this archival tapes, and I was like, oh my God, this kid getting into a fight that I filmed is Kier. And I texted a friend, and, you know, I sent him a screen grab, and he was like, yep, that's Kier. But it was a moment where he was angry, but he's 11 years old, you know, and so it's like,
yeah.
it's so precious and innocent and raw and real. It says a lot that he, you know, you can know his capacity for anger is mm-hmm. that vivid and raw, and yet sort of know him in the present day as someone who's you can't even imagine him being angry.
Yeah, it's interesting. He also carries a lot of guilt. This is another really important part of where the story sort of comes to toward the end, and I won't give anything away there. But he has this guilt over his father, because the last thing he said to him in some fit of a fight, you know, he said that he hated him.
Yeah, yeah, I think that haunted him, and it still haunts him to this day.
Let's talk about Nina. Nina is, I have to say, she's really, I wasn't sure if she was going to be just kind of a secondary character, and maybe in some ways you could call her that, I guess, but I don't know, I thought she was a really important part of the story. She's Zach's, at the time anyway, his girlfriend, and she, as you say, he's gotten her pregnant, and they're having to deal with, you know, just their basic incapacity to have a mature adult relationship, yet they're so young and try to raise a child. And I don't know, I was really touched by her own experience of not really finding anyone in childhood who could love her or touch her or hold her or offer her support. I just found that I have to say it was a really important part of the film for me.
I mean, we really try to capture like the holistic, I guess, texture of the cycle of violence and why it happens. And I think, you know, there's a lot, it has a lot to do with who these women are, but also, you know, this really touchy question of why they stay in these relationships.
Yep.
I mean, often that question is asked as sort of like rhetorically to brush off the women as like, oh, it's their fault, you know. Mm-hmm. But I really want to sort of get, in the same way that we explore through character, you know, the males in the film and, you know, how they do or do not perpetuate the cycle of violence. I wanted to explore like why these women don't leave the relationship, and it's, you know, to really make it more complicated. And so when Nina becomes a central character, you know, she didn't even realize that she was I remember asking her on film, which isn't in the film, but I remember asking her on film, you know, how do you feel about being a main character in the film now? And she was like, oh, I didn't realize I was, even though by that point I'd been following her for several months, you know, like regularly filming with her too. But yeah, I mean, I think that was actually one of the last things we were able to really make pay off in a way, is her sort of landing and her having sort of an arc as well. At first I sort of saw her as sort of the younger, more present day answer to my mother. And to a certain extent, Kier's mother as well.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, it certainly helped that she had an arc because, you know, like you're seeing this woman sort of go through a tough relationship, and it helps you to understand the cycle of violence more.
Did the film in any way get in the way with your friendship? In particular with Zach, you know, you guys were closer, I think, when you were younger. Was that a problem for you trying to be this documentary filmmaker? Did it get in the way, I guess?
I mean, certainly it was something to be thought about. I mean, once we dug deeper into, you know, how volatile Zach and Nina's relationship was getting, I mean, you know, sometimes it kept me up at night thinking how I was going to handle this in the film. Because so when dealing with the cycle of violence, especially in a documentary, I feel like I was battling two opposing forces. One force was our collective value of seeing this, of wanting to end the cycle of violence. And the other one, you know, of us sort of valuing privacy and valuing and sort of like, you know, this thought of like, well, we just let families deal with their own issues. You know, they can deal with their own issues behind closed doors, and it's just their privacy that we have to respect. And so I had to sort of tiptoe around very carefully, you know, me caring a lot about making a film that really explored the cycle of violence to hopefully make it difference in the world, and also respecting both Nina's and Zach's privacy, you know, and really making sure I got consent every step of the way.
Right.
And that ultimately was helped by me being this character that's sort of like this cameraman. And so the filmmaking process itself is sort of has an arc in the film as well, you know, like the filmmaking becomes more and more meta and more and more interactive as time goes along. And so I sort of present the audience with these moments of, you know, negotiating for consent in the film. And I just, you know, to me, the question was always beyond, you know, is this relationship abusive? It was always bigger than that, I guess. Yeah. You know, it wasn't just about that. You know, it was about how do we talk about, how do we like even dig into this? How do we grapple with this? I mean, it's like that physics sort of problem of like you can know where an electron is, but you can't sort of measure its energy, or I forget how it goes, but it's some principle where it's like, you know, like just measuring trying to measure the result affects the result, and so that's sort of where we're at with domestic violence because of these two opposing values of privacy and, you know, and wanting to end it.
Yeah, there's even a moment where you ask, I think it's Nina, you say, how should I bring this up with Zach? Like, you're that the fact that we see you interrogating that question, you know, dealing with that question, that comes up a few times in the film. It's like that's part of the conceit of the film, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, in storytelling, people want to be able to empathize or put themselves in the shoes of a character or, you know, some aspect of the film. And in situations of domestic violence, like, you don't, you know, like, I don't think the audience necessarily, unless they've experienced it themselves, I don't think they necessarily have a easy inroad into, you know, a couple. And so I think my character in trying to sort of get at what was happening between Zach and Nina was the empathetic vehicle for, you know, general audiences to sort of put themselves into my shoes.
Yeah.
Because it's difficult, you know, and I don't think we have a lot of examples of that in storytelling. You
right.
know, like, how do you, yeah. as a friend or as someone who sees something, you know, how do you say something?
Let's, without giving too much away, let's talk about the interview you do with your mother in the film. It's halting at first. It seems excruciating a little bit as you're even setting it up and how she's going to react to the questions you might have. And we don't have to reveal too much, but I just wanted to know, how difficult was that?
Yeah, I mean, it's not. I just like called her up and was like, can I interview you for my documentary? And she was like, yeah. And then we just chose a date. I mean, it wasn't, you know, I was just going to have her go through the history of what happened so it could help me understand. Mm. You know, like I said, I was looking for any way to understand what happened because so much of it is just blocked out. I feel like I have this sort of this gap in my life of not really remembering things that happened because I blocked so much of it out.
Wow.
And so that was my intent going into it. And then, you know, I'd cut so many scenes trying to sort of bring out some sort of backstory narrative. And then when I met my co-editor, Josh Altman, last summer, and he took a swing at it, I mean, what you see in the film is basically his first try. I mean, and he made it more about what wasn't being said and
yep.
the way that it was said, and,
yep.
and it felt like more of and he brought out these moments in this hour and a half long interview that were more about confrontation, really getting at, you know, how we felt about each other rather than I felt like what I was doing with the two other people I had interviewed to build up my character, which was just to give exposition.
Yeah. Let me play a moment you referred to earlier. It comes later in the film. You talked about how you spent a good part of your childhood and, I guess, college days and school days trying to get some free therapy from people. And there's this interchange that you mentioned between you and Kier. I want to play this because there's a couple of questions I want to ask you about it. Here's another moment from the film.
So what do you think you've gotten out of this documentary?
It's almost like free therapy.
Yeah. I'm making this film because I was physically disciplined by my stepfather. You know, it didn't make sense to me. And I saw myself in your own story.
Wow. That's... Wow, Bing. I had no idea, dude. No, that's really cool, though. Wow.
Did the film, you think, help you work things out? I mean, there's a moment, you said to your mom in the film that you're not sure. And I'm guessing this is probably why, Bing, you have blocked a lot of this stuff out. You said you don't like to think about your stepfather. You don't like to think about those parts of the past. And, you know, your mom said, look, I don't think that's going to work. I don't think that's the way to do it. And so I'm wondering, did making this film help, you know?
Not really. I felt like... I don't think I would have gotten as far as I don't think I would have emotionally grown as much if I hadn't done this film. But it's less about making the film and more about the fact that I went and started seeing a therapist because of making the film.
Huh. Huh.
and how the film worked in tandem with that work. I mean, I showed my therapist a rough cut, and you know, and she, of course she loved it because this is, you know, this is her world. This is like what she deals with, childhood development and violence and trauma. And, you know, and it helped me get clarity about how I felt about my family, how I felt about the past, you know, and like currently, you know, we're sort of working on building up, the, you know, bringing back those memories so I can build up a personal history for myself. So that certainly helped. But I mean, it's like I spent most of the time making the film just sort of figuring out how to make the film and being everybody else's therapist. I mean, now I understand why therapists have therapists. But it's, you know, it's like this is like it's things like this, like press interviews and Q&As and radio shows that were finally like now I'm getting asked the questions. And, you know, I guess this post film release press blitz is my therapy now. So thanks.
That's Bing Liu. His film is called Minding the Gap. We're going to be screening it next Wednesday night. This is part of our Through the Lens series, our partnership with Utah Film Center. It's at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in downtown Salt Lake City. Bing is going to join us for a Q&A after the film, and we have details about all of that on our website, radiowest.org. Radio West is a production of KUER News. Our thanks to Claire Jones. We had technical direction from Tim Slover, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.